BHP Engineers versus Rexnord, and Mr. Kelly.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Daniel Kelly. It is my honor to represent BHP Engineers UK Limited and BHP Engineers Limited. This court should reverse the district court because the settlement agreement cannot unambiguously mean that the exclusivity right granted by the settlement agreement expires with the party's pre-existing prior value-added distributorship agreement, the VAD. In our briefs, we explained how the exclusivity clause works, what its terms are, and how long it lasts, and when it will expire based upon its own terms. This morning, we'd like to focus on the three reasons the exclusivity clause cannot unambiguously expire along with that prior VAD. A contract, of course, is ambiguous when its terms are reasonably or fairly susceptible of more than one construction. These are the three reasons that it cannot unambiguously mean what the district court said. First, the incorporation clause in the settlement agreement says that the settlement agreement and the VAD are separate agreements. Second, reading the exclusivity clause the way the district court did upsets the careful balance between the risks and benefits that the parties agreed to in the settlement agreement. And third, reading it the way the district court did deprives one half of the exclusivity clause's meaning from taking effect. It said it applies to current and future BHP installations. Cutting off the exclusivity right when the district court did means it could never apply to future installations.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
Please.
In your view, what does this clause mean?
In our view, the clause means that it applies to BHP installations within the VAD territory. And what that means, it's an unusual exclusivity clause. Most cover an entire territory and give you protection against competition in that territory with respect to everyone there. This exclusivity clause applies very narrowly to current and future BHP customers. So Rexnord and any other distributor is free to compete in that territory unless the customer has a BHP installation. Then it's a BHP.
If that BHP installation, initial installation,
yes,
was after the period of this agreement, would this clause still cover with respect to after installation sales?
Yes, Your Honor, it would. And that's actually one of the pieces of information that teaches us that the parties intended the exclusivity right to last beyond the term of the VAD. The VAD.
I find it very difficult to see how it would be a reasonable business decision your opponents to agree to an open-ended clause like that that would cover your business not only during the VAD period, but after it.
Sure. And the reason that that was reasonable for Rexnord to do is because there was an exchange of risks and benefits in the settlement agreement. BHP got the right to aftermarket exclusivity, but it also took on a very unusual obligation. It took on the obligation of holding Rexnord harmless from any of the claims that the customers might have based on faulty change. And that is the basis of the entire dispute that led to the settlement agreement, is a profusion of faulty chains. And so the way this got resolved, parties got together, BHP valued the aftermarket exclusivity, Rexnord valued being released and held harmless from any future warranty claims, and that was the exchange of consideration. So because the hold harmless obligation lasts indefinitely, so does the exclusivity right. So they match each other, and that's why it was a reasonable thing for Rexnord to do. Now, it would be unreasonable, I think, to say anything to the contrary, because what that would mean is that BHP was agreeing to benefits for a period of only 3 years. This was executed in 2003. The VAD was set to expire in 2006. And what they would have had would be aftermarket exclusivity for 3 years. but they would hold harmless obligations forever afterwards.
Now, what you and I have been talking about is possible, from your perspective, certainly logical and reasonable ways to try to protect your business interests. This is here on summary judgment. Was there any extrinsic evidence submitted that would support your perspective?
There was, Your Honor. We had the testimony of Mr. A.J. Batra, who's the owner of BHP, and he testified in his deposition that the purpose and the extent of the exclusivity clause was to mirror the obligation that he was undertaking with the hold harmless. One of the other details that's a part of this is there was a motion to compel that BHP brought to compel discovery responses. Rexnord refused to produce evidence that would have allowed us to establish that they had the same understanding of what the purpose was of the exclusivity rights and the hold harmless. And if the court had granted that motion to compel, we believe the evidence we would find would indicate that not only did BHP understand these two to be balancing clauses, but that Rexnord understood that these would be balancing clauses. And that would allow us to use that as extrinsic evidence.
If we were to determine that this case could not be decided on the plain language and structure of the contract, is the case still ready for summary judgment disposition, or is there additional discovery that needs to take place?
There is additional discovery that would be needed, Your Honor. We would need to go back and refile our motion to compel so that we could get the information that Rexnord has that we believe would establish their understanding. Because as the court knows, generally speaking, subjective intent cannot be used as extrinsic evidence to establish the intent of a written contract. However, there is an exception to that. When both parties share the same subjective intent, although uncommunicated, that can be used to establish the intent of the agreement. So we would need to engage in that discovery to get the information to show they shared the same subjective intent that we do.
You talked about the case from your best perspective, I think. Let's talk about the problem, though. The problem is the language and structure of the contract. This is in a clause which deals with the VAD, and very frankly, that last sentence in that paragraph seems to me you give it a very strained reading, and I'd really like your reaction to that.
Certainly. Your Honor, the way we believe that language works is it tells us itself that the VAD and the CSA are completely, totally separate agreements, and that the settlement agreement has a life of its own. And the reason for that is the incorporation clause in paragraph 2 says that these three provisions in the settlement agreement will be included. It says the VAD will be amended, future perfect tense, will be amended to incorporate those three elements. Well, if it has to be amended sometime in the future to include those, then that necessarily means that right now, prior to amendment, it does not include those. And yet, both parties understood that these were fully in force in effect. It was a present tense right to have aftermarket exclusivity, extended warranty, and a fixed price. Both parties agreed on that. Both parties have acted consistently with that. And yet, no amendment has ever been made to the VAD. So if the VAD was unnecessary to give life to these terms, the VAD cannot cause their termination. So the incorporation clause itself says these are separate agreements, and it has a life of its own. And if you'd like, I will keep the remainder of my time for reply.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. McGrath.
Morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brian McGrath. I represent Rexnord in this matter. There are just three brief points I'd like to make. The first is, I think the court has already pointed out, the sentence that we're talking about is in the middle of a paragraph and has to be read in the context of that entire paragraph, which reaffirms the supremacy and validity of the VAD and indicates that the remaining provisions of that paragraph are amendments to the VAD. And it's impossible to read that paragraph without reading that first sentence and the last sentence in that context. Second, that same paragraph, paragraph 2, then set forth three specific amendments to the VAD. It amended the price provision under paragraph 8 of the VAD. Rexnord had the right to change prices at any time. Under this amendment, it had to keep prices firm through July 1, 2005. It amended section 3 of the VAD, which provided that they were non-exclusive for replacement parts and made them exclusive for replacement parts. And it amended paragraph 10 of the VAD, which it provided for an 18-month warranty, and it made it a 24-month warranty.
When was the VAD scheduled to expire?
May 9th, 2006.
I see. Thank you.
The rest of the settlement agreement really has no impact on the terms of the VAD. What had happened was there was a dispute about chain, and in the settlement agreement, the parties did two things. They resolved that dispute about the quality of the chain by Rexnord paying some money, the parties releasing each other from claims for chain that had been delivered in the past, and then they made these three amendments to the VAD. So the settlement agreement is really in two parts. It's the settlement of the chain through financial consideration and the amendments to the VAD. The VAD then expired on May 9, 2006, and that's my third and last point. And what happens is all of the distribution rights that BHP had expired. The right to pricing of any type expired. The right to a warranty of any type expired. The right to be exclusive for new installations expired, and the right to be exclusive for replacement parts expired. After all, how can you be exclusive? How can you have an exclusive right to sell our replacement parts if you have actually no right to buy or resell our replacement parts because your right to buy and resell expired on May 9, 2006? There were only two points that counsel made during his argument that I do want to respond to. One is he describes this, what he characterizes as a very broad hold harmless provision in the CSA that they somehow tie to this aftermarket exclusivity. The court will note it's actually a very narrow hold harmless provision, and it only has to do with the fact that they hold us harmless from warranties they had made. It says that they'll hold us harmless if they made warranties on chain prior to 2002, they hold us harmless from that. It has nothing to do with anything else. And the last point is, Your Honor, you asked about extrinsic evidence. And he said, well, Mr. Batra testified this was the intent of the parties. If the court were to look at that extrinsic evidence, it's actually in the appendix at page 206. And what you'll see is I asked him, did you ever talk with Rexnord about this notion that you have that the hold harmless and the exclusivity are tied together? And he says, that was our deal. I said, no, sir. Did you ever discuss it with the other side so that it could be a shared intent? And he says, no, we never discussed that. So that extrinsic evidence actually would cut against BHP's position in this. That might have been his subjective, unexpressed intent, but it has nothing to do with the parties' agreement between themselves. And, in fact, if the court ever gets to the extrinsic evidence, what you'll see is that Mr. Batra himself twice characterized this as an amendment to the VAD, including as late as April 2006, where he told us that we should read the VAD with those three amendments in mind. And that particular information, Your Honors, is in the supplemental appendix at page 184. He sends us an email that says the VAD has been amended by paragraph 2, and you should read it with those three amendments in mind. Unless the court has any questions, I don't have anything else to add.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kelly, anything further?
Your Honor, the Supremacy Clause and the Incorporation Clause both speak to the agreements being separate agreements. If the CSA, paragraph 2, was nothing more than an amendment to the VAD, there would be completely no reason for the Supremacy Clause. It is there because both parties understood that there was the potential that the settlement agreement would cause a novation of the VAD. They are separate agreements. Their terms have they have life according to their own terms. They will terminate when the functional time comes for that. The third part that I didn't get into too much was that if we read the exclusivity clause the way Rexnord wishes, there is no aftermarket exclusivity for future installations. And that is something for which Mr. Batra specifically negotiated, and he had to add that himself into one of the versions of the CSA. The parts that they are selling from Rexnord have a functional life of between 6 and 15 years. An installation done the day after execution of the settlement agreement would never bring any aftermarket business for Mr. Bhatia, because the VAD would have expired 3 years before there being any need for those replacement parts. Your Honor, just a final thought. We do ask the court to reverse the district court and declare that, that the exclusivity clause works the way we explained in our briefs. We believe that it would be entirely appropriate to reverse and remand for further fact-finding to resolve the ambiguity. But at the very least, we ask that the court would determine that the exclusivity clause and the hold harmless clause, both amending functionally the relationship, have the same expiration period. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement.